Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
In this episode of the podcast, we're going to celebrate more birthdays than a Chuck E. Cheese on a Saturday afternoon, and are all of the Hall of Fame variety, and we'll talk about the stories coming up in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from the Pigpen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of pigskindispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen. Today, we have, just like we said at our tease at the beginning, we are all birthdays of Hall of Famers today, and we have a lot of them with some very, very interesting stories of the gridiron, which I think you're going to enjoy, because we sure enjoy bringing them to you, and these are some great players. And let's get started right now with your football history headlines. March 17th, 1871, Hesper, Kansas, the two-way player that manned both the halfback and the tackle positions at two schools, Kansas in 1895, and Pennsylvania, 1897 to 1899. John Outland entered his life. His bio on the NFF site says that he was a small minority of players who were inducted at two different positions into the College Football Hall of Fame. Outland garnered consensus All-American honors in 1897 at tackle, and consensus All-American honors at back in 1898. Outland actually began his football career at Penn College in Oskaloosa, Iowa in 1892 and 1893. He captained a team and led it in scoring in 1893. In the fall of 1895, Outland entered the University of Kansas. He led it at tackle that season when the Jayhawks posted a 6-1 record. He later transferred to the University of Pennsylvania to pursue a medical degree. John was an outspoken advocate for the big man on the O-line, claiming they should indeed get more recognition and prestige for the difficult jobs they do in the trenches. The National Football Foundation voters selected the name of John Outland into the 2000 to become an inducted player into the College Football Hall of Fame. March 17, 1872, Melbourne, Australia. Pat O'Day from the University of Wisconsin fullback from 1896 to 1899 was born. The footballfoundation.org says O'Day played Australian rules football at Xavier College and professionally for the Melbourne Football Club at Esdron Football Club in Australia before arriving in the United States in 1896. Almost as soon as he stepped on American soil, Pat headed to Wisconsin, following his brother Andy, who coached track at Wisconsin. The younger O'Day enrolled at the school and not only became a star on the gridiron, but also participated at track and rowing. Pat uses skill learned in his homeland with the Australian rules, running drop kick, and was known as the kangaroo kicker. He was a master at the practice of punting and drop kicking, which was done on the run. His longest drop kick went 62 yards on November 15, 1898 against Northwestern during a heavy blizzard. His NFF bio goes on to say that he made a 60-yard dropkick field goal against the University of Chicago in 1897, and also against Minnesota in 1899. His place kicks included 60 yards against Minnesota and 57-yarder against Illinois in 1899. O'Day was credited with long punts. One was 110 yards against Minnesota in 1897. Then he had another one in 1899 against Yale that was on a 100-yard punt. And had a small one of 85 yards against Lake Forest in 1896. He made a 90-yard run against Beloit in 1899 and in 4 years made 32 field goals. Pat O'Day was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1962. March 17th, 1876, Cimarron, New Mexico. The halfback/quarterback of the 1895 and 1897 to 1901 Columbia University football teams was born, Bill Morley. Bill was part of a high-powered and worrisome backfield for the Columbia Lions opponents as they could score from anywhere for the National Football Foundation. Morley led the first Lions team that beat Yale in a 5-0 victory and was pretty much carried on Morley's shoulders. Bill beat up the Elis pretty good with crushing blocks and piercing runs. After playing one season at Michigan in 1895, Morley went on to receive All-America honors in 1900 and 1901 with Columbia. During his 3 years at Columbia, Morley helped the Blue and White amass a record of 23-11-1. Bill Morley was inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame in 1971. Bill was picked as the first former player to coach the Lions as he notched up a 26-11-4 record at Columbia in 4 seasons there. And his 1902 team finished with 9-1, losing only once to Yale. March 17, 1905, Youngstown, Ohio. The University of Pittsburgh's great end from 1927 to 1929, Joe Donches was born. The NFF says Donches quit school in the 5th grade to earn money working in a steel mill. And that could have been the end of this student-athlete's story right there, but thankfully it's not. Some 5 years later, an alumnus of Wyoming Seminary found out about Donches' story and then promptly sent Joe off to that famous prep school. Donches turned out to be an excellent student and a fast learner. As a matter of fact, he made up 3 grades in just 1 year at the school. After graduating from Wyoming Seminary, Joe attended Pitt and excelled there both academically and in athletics. The Panthers were undefeated in 1929, and that coincided with the year Donches was chosen as a consensus All-American. The Panthers were highly touted and went to the Rose Bowl that season, sporting 4 All-Americans and are labeled as one of the greatest teams in the history of Eastern football. That may have gone to the team's heads, though, as Pitt was dominated by the University of Southern California in a 47-14 thumping. Donches again played in the Rose Bowl in 1928 against Stanford, and again, despite a powerful team, Pittsburgh was a victim of a 7-6 defeat at the hands of the Cardinal. Joe Donches received the honor due to his great legacy being placed into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1979. Okay, we just want to take a break here for a second because we got many more stories to come with these Hall of Fame birthdays. And we want to thank you. And we hope that you're finding value with these stories of the great history of the gridiron. And if you do, we hope you look on our front page of the pigskindispatch.com and look up at the top and there's a section that says help with the show. And if you could just help us out here with a little bit of the expenses, any amount will do. And if you do, we are going to give you a gift. We are going to give you the top 20 numbers. I'm sorry, 21 numbers. We're going to go zeros and double zeros all the way up to 20 of our top players that we pick from each position in the NFL on the list with myself and my guests that we've had on our episodes is all in one place for you. It's a great little package to look at. You can see all those great skill set position numbers and review what we have on there. And that's our gift just to say thank you for finding value in our show. And we hope you do. Now let's get back to your birthdays of Hall of Famers. March 17th, 1912, Kaler, Pennsylvania. Joe Steidahar, the famous two-way tackle from West Virginia University from 1933 to 1935, was born. The footballfoundation.org tells how Steidahar regularly dismantled and caused all kinds of havoc for opposing offenses. As a senior in 1935, Steidahar performed so well that he was asked to play in the East-West Shrine Game and the College All-Star Game in Chicago. Jay Barwanger, the first Heisman Trophy winner, played in the backfield on those All-Star games, and he had this to say about Steidahar. I played in 2 All-Star games with him, and I thought he was the best tackle by far of that collegiate group. He proved to me in those 2 games that he was a tremendous player. The College Football Hall of Fame inducted Joe Steidahar in 1972. After school, the Chicago Bears used their top pick in the very first NFL draft of 1936 to choose Joe to join the team. Steidahar played in Chicago for 9 seasons as a two-way player that seldom left the field for Coach George Halas. He made the All-NFL team in 5 straight seasons and many times didn't wear a helmet in the games. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Joe Steidahar in 1967. Joe later went on to be the head coach of the LA Rams and later the Chicago Cardinals in the NFL. Now, let me tell you a story of the gridiron that starts off just a little bit before World War I. and started in a small town in the great state of Texas. A family of five lived on a small farm there, and the patriarch earned a living by working on the Santa Fe Railroad when not tending to the farm. When the children were not very old, their father left the homestead, forcing their mother to raise the children and make ends meet using the farm's resources. The younger boy, Samuel, was a spirited youth who helped his mother along with his siblings on the farm. When Samuel was 16, the family moved to a larger town in Texas, and the boy became enamored with the game of baseball. He found throwing the football around too, especially through a swinging tire, as it helped his arm strength for the accuracy of baseball. Samuel's favorite thing to do with the pigskin was to punt it high and as far as he could. The local high school coach talked Samuel into playing quarterback on the team, and he also got to do his favorite football activity of punting when needed. Samuel blossomed as an athlete, and it looked as like his baseball aspirations were going to come true. Washington State University was all set to give him a scholarship for baseball, but then tragedy set in about a month before he was ready to leave for the school. In a local game in Texas, Samuel injured his leg while sliding into second base, and because of the injury, the dream scholarship offer fell through. At this low point of despair, something promising occurred. Coach Dutch Meyer of Texas Christian University told the boy he could play all three sports, basketball, football, and baseball at TCU. Another fortunate circumstance occurred right before Samuel's first season at TCU. College football adopted the use of a narrower girth football, which they figured would fit the hand better for throwing. This played perfectly into Samuel's skill set and his training from his youth. Slinging Sammy Baugh threw 587 passes in his three seasons for 39 touchdowns and became the early face of the gridiron passing game. Remember, teams that threw the ball even 10 times in a game were considered odd in those days. We remember Sammy and his March 17, 1914 birth in Temple, Texas on his day. Sammy Baugh, according to the NFF, says that he was an excellent punter who also, as a professional, would lead the league four times in punting. During a 3-2 TCU victory over LSU in the Sugar Bowl, Baugh punted 14 times for a 48-yard average, placing many kicks inside the Tiger 5-yard line. Baugh gained All-American status in 1935 and repeated as a consensus All-America in his 1936 senior season. The National Football Foundation saluted the great career of Sammy Baugh by placing his stats and story in the College Football Hall of Fame in 1951. When Baugh left TCU, he joined the Washington Redskins, and when they used the number one overall pick in the 1937 NFL draft to select him. In 16 professional seasons, Sammy played on five division and two league championship teams. As a passer, Baugh led the league six times and still holds many NFL passing records, tossing an amazing 187 touchdowns in that period of time. In addition to being a great passer and punter, Baugh was also an extremely efficient defensive player, as he led the NFL in interceptions in 1943 and finished his NFL career with 31 picks. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Sammy Baugh to Gridiron Legacy in 1963. Oh, and we're not done with the birthday stories yet. We have many more to come. Like this one, took place on March 17, 1950 in Thomaston, Georgia. Bill Hartman, the fine fullback from 1935 to 1937 at the University of Georgia, was born. The NFF states that he was an All-American fullback and captain in 1937. That season, Bill booted an 82-yard punt against Tulane and ran back a 93-yard kickoff return against Georgia Tech. Bill Hartman was inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame in 1984. March 17, 1916, Union County, Tennessee. Tennessee Volunteer Guard from 38 to 1939, Bob Suffrage arrived in his life. The footballfoundation.org states that Suffrage was an All-America three times and was chosen by the Football Writers Association for the all-time All-American team. He was a brilliant blocker and tackler. Suffrage had an uncanny knack for anticipating the snap count and using his quickness to disrupt plays. As a matter of fact, Bob once blocked the same point after touchdown attempt three times. Twice, he was called for offsides, when many observers felt that the officials got the call wrong. Third time, it counted and he blocked it. Bob Suffrage received his induction to the College Football Hall of Fame in 1961. He played with the Philadelphia Eagles in 1941 and 1945, bookending his service to his country in the U.S. Navy during World War II. March 17, 1931, Bowden, Georgia. The great guard from 1948 through the 1951 season at Georgia Tech, Ray Beck was born. The NFF says that Ray was named as an All-American player by the Football Writers Association and the American Football Coaches Association. The Birmingham Quarterback Club named him the most valuable lineman in the Southeastern Conference. In 1951, Beck helped Georgia Tech to an 11-0-1 season that included a 17-14 victory over Baylor in the Orange Bowl. That 1951 season at Georgia Tech was part of a streak of 30 games without a loss. The College Football Hall of Fame inducted Ray Beck in 1997, and after he graduated, Ray played in the NFL with the New York Giants for a couple of seasons. May 17, 1967, Houston, Texas. The Austin, Texas A&I running back from 1986 to 1989, Johnny Bailey was born. The National Football Foundation says that Bailey was one of the greatest running backs in Division II history, as Johnny Bailey earned first-team All-America honors for an amazing four times. Bailey opened his collegiate career with four 200-yard games and rushed for 100 yards or more in his first 11 games. Now think about that for a second. His first two games on the football field, he rushes for 200 yards. Then he goes on a streak of hitting a 100-yard mark in 11 straight, starting off in his collegiate career. Amazing. He went on to break the 200-yard plateau 13 times and captured the Division II national rushing title in 1986, 1987, and 1988. Bailey was college football's all-purpose yardage leader with 7,803 yards, and he was third all-time leading in intercollegiate scoring with 428 points. The collegiate records and story of Johnny Bailey were preserved in the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2000. And Johnny played in the NFL for six seasons with the Chicago Bears, the Arizona Cardinals, and the St. Louis Rams. And he even led the league in punt returns twice in those 6 years. Some amazing players we talked about today, and we're glad you joined us to hear these stories, because that's definitely part of the preservation of the game and its history, is remembering these great Hall of Fame players and some of the amazing feats that they did, you know, like Johnny Bailey and Sammy Baugh. Those are just some tremendous, tremendous personal accomplishments and team accomplishments that these men have done in the College and Football Hall of Fame careers that they've had. And we hope you join us back tomorrow, because we're going to have more of these great stories to share with you on our March 18th edition. And don't forget, March 17th, it's a bonus day for the podcast, because we have author Jennifer Taylor Hall of Amos Alonzo Stagg, College Football's Man of Motion. And we had an interview where we got to talk to Jennifer about the great feats of Amos Alonzo Stagg in the months of February and March. And we're sort of commemorating this because March 17th is the anniversary of Coach Stagg's departure from this world, and he lived to 102 years old and has a great football life and many contributions, and we're glad that Jennifer Taylor Hall was able to share them with us. So make sure, as soon as you get done here, go over and check out that great podcast, because it's an excellent one. And also check out my friends at the sportshistorynetwork.com, because there are some great podcasts there too, and interviews and solos and talking about all kinds of sports history, not just football, and it's something I think you'll really find valuable and really enjoy over there. So make sure you check that out as well, sportshistorynetwork.com. So until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Arnie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.